Dangerous delivery towards the spot, it's in! And it's Pat Hooven, who else?
Long cutting in off the right side, has another shot! Oh! Jack Boyle with another incredible goal for Shamrock Rovers!
Here is Mandrew, is that kind of position? Oh, what a goal! What a goal from Donny Mandrew!
So we're only three rounds of games in, and it's Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk already at the top of the table, but Cork City bottom with no goals and no points so far. We have so much to discuss with John Dunleavy, the ex-Cork City player, now with Sligo Rovers, and we have Dan McDonald in here as ever for LOI Weekly. How are you, Dan?
Good, John. Not too bad.
Just looking at the table here, it's already 9 points Rovers, 9 points Dundalk. They're cut off, and that'll be that
for the two horse races confirmed.
It's already after
before
three
Chatham,
games.
Before Cheltenham, the two horse races is
we're a little bit
sorted.
Worried about the coronavirus. You know, Cheltenham already doubts that it might go ahead. Is it going to affect football either?
They're starting to talk about Euro 2020 now. I mean, the 1 year that UEFA are doing a tournament where you fly all around Europe for the competition, then you're like, you're talking Europa League, Champions League. You don't want to be flippant about it now, really. But it is sort of getting to that stage where, I mean, sporting events are now being cancelled. I think Serie A has been called off. They have to play them behind closed doors this weekend. So
there's so much bad news around the world. I basically just, like, I block it out at this stage because it's just only so much bad news you can take in. But when it starts affecting Cheltenham or
that's what's getting
events,
really personal for
like,
you now.
Well, I live in the first world. All of a sudden, I get really animated about it. Like, we need to deal with this. You know, whereas I've had a friend from Iran tell me, like, we've been locked up in the house for a week, we actually can't leave because people have died there. But I'm worried about Cheltenham.
You're like, I've got a couple of good antipost bets.
I mean, you actually do.
You've got your problems.
So the antipost bets could be rendered redundant. Yeah. And, you know, that wouldn't be good at all.
They probably get a refund, whereas the people in Iran won't get those weeks they spent
and
in their house
back. And
they're
not betting on Cheltenham.
No, to be fair, they're not. So
you've seen a lot of football over the last
few weeks.
I have,
yeah.
You've been flat out.
Derry Finn Harps on Friday and then... then Monday I was up in Dundalk and Cork.
Actually, you sounded very downbeat on the old tweet machine. It was like, this game is...
Dundalk-Cork was a nonsense of a match. Yeah.
Nonsense of a match.
Like, I think after like five to 10 minutes, it was like, this is...
It doesn't look beautiful.
This is sort of a training match. Like
Dan has been in unbelievable form with his headlines for a long time now. And Corkscrew is just the latest one, really. I don't know if I could tell the Frankie goes to Hall.
No,
it's very hard
to tell that story now. I shouldn't even allude to it.
A friend of mine, let's call her a friend, right? So essentially, she recently became pregnant, and I was saying, oh, Frankie's pregnant, to which Dan said, Frankie goes to Hollis Street. Which I thought was great.
That was it.
It was very, very good.
Probably had to be there at the time.
Corkscrew is right up there as
Corkscrew,
well. Imagine
well,
we'd a live studio audience and be bursting themselves laughing at that.
Yeah, or
the
canned laughter that we would actually add after the fact. But
Cork or screw.
Well, you see, it's not even. I mean, again, we're sort of like it's a sort of a light-hearted tone about that, but actually, just a real serious discussion about how bad things are at Cork.
How close were they to going?
Well, it
out
does
of
seem they were a couple of hours away from being in bother and. Like, I almost think that this story probably hasn't got as much traction as you might
Couldn't
think
agree
it, would
more.
Be, it would deserve. And I wonder, is this a classic Dublin media thing that had it been a Shamrock Rovers a couple of hours away from, like, real bother, would it have been a bigger tale? I
mean, maybe does that photo of Finney there almost encapsulate what challenge he's faced with at the moment?
Like,
he's kind of like, holy crap, what have I got myself in for? I left Longford... for a big job, and now it's like, wow, this is a big, big job, but not in the way I thought.
But he was actually quite upbeat on Monday. I think he has to be. I mean, I have a bit of sympathy for him in the sense that, as much as he says he knew it was a tough job, I'm not sure if people necessarily knew the extent to which how difficult it has become. I mean, they were poor on Monday. I know that they're trying to take positivity from it.
Well, in fairness, though, against Rovers, so they got battered by Rovers, but they actually had two very good chances at nil all. And I would give some... They're playing against Rovers, they have no chance. But they did create chances.
But you're clutching at a small bit. Now, I know what you're saying. They face
Rovers and Dundalk are going to batter
teams
anyway.
They face Rovers and Dundalk. But what I would say about Cork's situation, I watched Finn Harps on Friday, who had a bit of a plan, players who know the league, like Barry McNamee is there, even his brother Tony. You look throughout, Dave Webster, they have a bit of know-how and they know the job at hand. You watch Cork and like on Monday...
And we just have like worried pictures of Neil Finn for the rest of the show.
But there's a lot of players there who are new to the league and you can't necessarily trust them to be as consistent. They might have maybe more ability than some, you know, because they've a good pedigree and good background, but
this is not the learning time, exactly.
It can be, and they play Finn
Harps. And you have a coach who's only learning as well.
And like they play Finn Harps on Friday, and I just from what I saw Finn Harps on Friday, and I saw Cork City on Monday, and Harps are ahead of them at this point. And maybe over time, you know, Cork have still, for all their resource issues, they still have a better resources than Finn Harps, and they are training together every day. They can build an understanding. But the broader picture here, to me, is a more worrying one for the league and the questions that it faces, because we probably would have, I mean, Cork won the Club of the Year at the Electricity League Awards last year.
How did they go from challenging in Europe to nearly being
But
best?
I'll just finish my point. Like two, three years ago, we would have spoke about Cork as being like, well, this is a fan-run club. You know, they've risen up from the ashes, best supporter club in the league. This is working. They're in Europe every year. But clearly the reality of what was going on was very different, and they've made big budgetary mistakes.
The only thing in their defence, like, so people have sort of taken this as a means to kind of slag the fan-run club ethos. This will happen where there's a lack of prudency at any club, potentially. There was just a spectacular mismanagement in terms of budget. There was a mistake, but I don't think you should kind of use it as a way of saying, oh, fan-run clubs don't
I think, work. Actually, I'm not so sure. I think it's a problem for, like, see, the fan-run model is fantastic, but, and, like, in theory, it's what you would like, but,
like, does the problem arise with too much money?
How does it operate? Well, no, I'm just saying that, how does it operate that, for example, Shamrock Rovers have one at the moment, but they don't really, like, they have a 50% one, so they have the fan ownership, the involvement, the sense of attachment, but they also had private investment, a substantial private investment, which is carrying them along. My concerns with, say, fan ownership and other clubs in the league would be that they wouldn't have the fan base of Cork, so they wouldn't necessarily be able to match it. Whereas Cork, it seems, within their fan-run model, they couldn't attract the business and commercial support from the city to back it up. And where the league is at the moment, and in fact where football is at generally, and you look at football across in, like, the lower leagues in England, clubs are massively reliant on benefactors and, you know, people who are supporting them. And Cork are now in a dilemma where Trevor Hemmings is now looking at, you know, he clearly wants to take over to some degree. And they're in a dilemma because how are they going to, like, people, there's always this assumption that the clubs at the top are going to come back to you. That, like, in this league where you don't have a TV deal, where you don't have, you know, massive guaranteed streams of revenue, it's a massive dilemma because, where is the money? It's like being at the top. How do you get to the top? Well, they don't have the money to get there unless they have some kind of investor coming in to support them. And people just assume, well, the Dundalk are going to go away, you know, those people are going to leave, or, you know, Rovers are, you know, will hit some difficulty. I'm not so sure that all of those things will occur within the next 3, 4, 5 years. And for a club like Cork, they have to now open their horizons a bit, and at least strongly consider it. I know they don't want to relinquish it from where they were before, but it might be something they look at. If you have 20,000, 25,000 fans, like some fan-run models in Scandinavia and Europe or whatever, then maybe.
Yeah.
But when you have a league with very limited sponsorship and TV deals and stuff, it's actually very hard.
We're running out of time and we do need to get to Galway Rising at some stage.
Well,
it doesn't happen this week, it'll never happen. But we do have GB, Golden Boot, Grainburg, over 5,000 people in Tala. Terrible defender by Cork.
This is Cork teamed again.
But yeah. Grainburg, he's obviously staking a claim here. 5 goals, first Rovers player since the 60s. I think, or thereabouts.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible haul. Now, he does seem to have picked up an injury, which is a slight problem. But
looks like he's out to nothing.
Last year, like, it was actually a very low-scoring year for strikers in the league. I mean, Junior ended up top of the charts with, I think, maybe 14, 15 goals. You know, it was actually, you know, that whole thing about a 20 goal a season striker, it just didn't exist last year.
The Hubenator has a couple after his penalty.
Yeah, and he did a lot of great work outside the box last year. And the couple of times I've watched Dundalk again, I'm not so sure he's going to have as prolific a year because he's doing a lot of work in other areas of the pitch and not
What's
so much
celebration around the box.
This is the Hubenator is in the Terminator.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So he does that after every goal.
Yeah.
You should have possibly figured it out by now. He scored around 70 goals in the last couple of years.
Yeah, but, only 7 from play last season and 6, but he's off the mark quickly.
But it does show the difference that, like, if you can unearth a striker when the figures were so low last year, the difference they could make. And Rovers have also signed Rory Gaffney now. I think we might talk about him a bit later on, but, you know, he's come into the equation. And it's possible that firepower that they have, could it be the difference this year? Could it bring them a bit closer? Because you forget that Burke wasn't there for most of last season, and he did actually score some big goals in the run-in.
And we did reference it at the top as well. The first two have predictably staked their claim.
And Friday is going to be good.
And Friday's going to be interesting. I think the thing about Dundalk is that they haven't really gotten going yet. And they actually have quite a few players injured, strangely, at the moment in midfield areas. So Rovers go into this game, granted Burke is out, but Rovers will go in probably more at full strength than Dundalk, which might be pivotal.
Well,
it's a big game for Rovers.
It's massive. Well, see, I don't know. Like, sometimes this game, like, I spoke to Chris Shields about it the other day. Like, the clubs played each other at the start of last season, or, you know, similar round of fixtures last year, and it's a shadow boxing game. It was nil all, and it's cagey. And sometimes I think that these early season games, it's dangerous to put too much meaning into them if it's later in the season. Now, I still think, you know, I hope it's a fantastic occasion. I hope the win stays away, because that's been ruining games, including Derry last week, because Tallaght can get pretty exposed to that. But you think there's a possibility that you should have close to a full house. You have the two best teams in the country, and if they can't deliver some kind of spectacle, like, you'd be pretty downbeat. And I think it's nicely poised. Rovers probably have a bit more. I mean, they scored six last week, and there's maybe a small bit more excitement about them. But the flip side of that is, like, Dundalk, I think against Shells they struggled a bit, and they had moments against Derry. But
what about the kid Flores, by the way? What a strike!
Some strike.
Great backdrop.
Some strike. Yeah. No, a horrible backdrop.
Horrible backdrop.
A goal that should be going viral now.
Arguably my favourite goal outside the foot, half volley. What more do you want? Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I've been saying this lad needs more game time because he can play.
It's exceptional.
And this is going to be. But like, this is game on Friday is only part of a massive doubleheader with Streets of Rage the second, or whatever they're called, playing Galway United on Saturday.
Yeah, the development team.
Street Fighter 2.
Development team, as they were called, and I think
what's that about? Longford Town seemingly chose not to put the name of the club they were playing on the match programme cover.
And sometimes, you know, sometimes there's no such thing as bad publicity if people are talking about what you're doing, but sometimes there is. Sometimes just you confirm a lot of suspicions or negative views that exist about the First Division. I think, as I said before, they had a point in complaining about...
Brandon Kavanagh was actually playing.
Yeah, they had a point about the process of how it happened. But once you're there, like, concentrate on promoting your own team.
And respect the players and the opposition. These are young players who deserve respect. They're playing their first game for Shamrock Rovers, the second or whatever they're called. And it's like,
I think it got the derision it probably deserved. And I mean, again, find reasons to talk about Longford and Drogheda and those clubs. They've stuff to advertise them, not sort of these stupid jibes which really say more about them than they do, but say more about Shamrock Rovers too, in my view.
After the break, we only have JD in the house, John Dunleavy. And you're welcome back to part two. We now have Johnny Dunleavy in studio. There are only two teams actually at the bottom with no points so far. Cork City, who Johnny Dunleavy left, and Sligo Rovers, who he joined. You left one sinking ship and you joined another, did you?
That's how you want to put it, Johnny.
No, in fairness to, I suppose it's been a bit more nuanced with Sligo. Yeah, you've had some tough games. How are you, by the
absolutely.
Way?
Absolutely. Very well.
It's good to have you back.
Good to see you. Yeah. I was up with your preview night last night there. It was.
Did you enjoy it?
Johnny's Cheltenham preview night.
It was good. Johnny's Cheltenham preview
Sam
night.
Sam and Leap. We're discussing maybe Cheltenham if we could go, but as we're saying with Dan, you never know with the virus.
Yeah, it's not looking good at the moment.
How is it looking in Sligo?
Listen, we've had a tough start, no question about it. The first three games. Even though we've been beaten in the first three games, I'm actually quite positive on it, to be fair. The game, especially in Dalymount the other night, we changed around a few things formationally, probably. We brought in a new left-back, Alex Cooper, who I think, no, I haven't seen much of him, but I think he's going to be very impressive.
Played for a team called Fresno or something like that.
Yeah, he played for a team called Fresno. They were a franchise that actually, as far as I know, they got moved maybe because they had no stadium.
Because Fresno was in my head. I was like, what is Fresno? Is it like some sort of food or something? Like, it rang a bell. Anyway.
Yeah.
They're no more.
Well, they're going to be coming back again next year, let's say.
Right.
But he had to find a team in the meantime, so the manager took him. But yeah, frustrating start, I think, for us, really. The first game from Park, the same. There was very little in the game.
And your manager, he's some scouting repertoire, because he gets like these players from literally all over.
Here, there and everywhere.
A guy who walks a cat, you know, every day, Chris Twardy, he got him last season.
Yeah. Archie the cat.
Timo with his
very colourful Instagram pictures of like around Strand.
Johnny Dunleavy, you know, spreads far and wide.
Yeah, far and wide. No, I have to say the boys that have come in are good characters as well. They've added to the dressing room now. Timo's a great fella. Geez, you want to eat the size of him. He is
enormous.
He's 6'5", yeah. 6'5", but he's built like a tank as well. He's like a
must be a very
Viking
active WhatsApp group of players coming in and out all the time in Sligo.
Yeah, this man has left and this man has come in.
Yeah,
regular
Romeo was gone.
Romeo was
gone. Might be back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to actually bring up John Mann because he got injured pre-season.
Yeah.
I just felt a bit uneasy about this. He was... The subject of a bad tackle in the pre-season game against Athlone, but it effectively ruled him out for around about 4 months. And I saw the tackle back, and I just thought it was a tackle that maybe wasn't necessary in a pre-season game. But what was the feeling in Sligo?
Possibly. I was at the game and I was watching it from a height, kind of. And I have to say, when the tackle went in first, I didn't really think too much of it. But obviously, immediately it looked bad, and you could hear John was very he was crying and different things like that. And it turned out to be a broken leg, unfortunately. And listen, the good thing probably for him is it's an undisplaced fracture. It's something that will heal well, especially for a fellow of his age. And I have to say, now the ability that he has, I hope he comes back, as good or not, if not better. Like,
How's your own injury situation? It's always a problem for you.
Unfortunately, if I was a horse, I'd be put down long ago. But
you would have gotten the bullet. Which is,
I suppose.
That
was one of my earlier quotes.
Terms, was it? Yeah. You still don't know if it was a euphemism or not.
Look, it's not easy for me. I suppose I take probably longer between matches to recover and things like that. Just more as a result of the surgeries than anything else. But we're managing as best we can, and the manager, the medical staff, everyone have been great to me in Sligo as well. So hopefully it's something we can manage going forward.
Like, I appreciate you have your own injury history, but as a player generally, all of a sudden, like, you have this long off season, and then you're into like Friday, Monday. How is it for the body generally? I mean, I said you have your own issues, but like, it's a tough one. Like, you see a lot of early season injuries now, and I sometimes wonder, is it schedule related?
Yeah, I'm not sure myself. I think the fixture schedule in the league is a bit of a farce anyway, and it's something that was mentioned maybe 3 years ago, and something that we really haven't dealt with. The build up of games in April, there might be something like 10 or 11 matches in April, and I think that's just nonsense. If you look later on in the season, I think there's a period maybe in August where we haven't got a home game for 5 weeks.
It's to do with the FAI Cup and how that space, if you get knocked out of a cup early, then you're in bother. But you also have that this year as well, generally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And no, I do understand that. And I understand there has to be a happy medium that we can find somewhere.
Shamrock Rovers like resting six players, I think, the other night, five or six players for the trip to Watford.
It's difficult. If you take a team that, say ourselves, we probably have a relatively tight squad. The more times we can play the same team, I would say, maybe it's the same for every team, but the manager would say the more times you can play the same team, the better. So when you have that build-up of fixtures and that real pile, you can't do much training in between. You're just going from game to game. If you get a few injuries, all of a sudden you're very stretched. And I think it's something we need to look at.
I think it's an issue that leadership is actually needed on, because this is one of the, and not to go back to the development team thing, but one of the discussions around that time was, it's a decision that all 19 clubs in the league should have had a vote on it. If all 19 clubs in the league had a vote on the length of the season, they would probably keep it, the democratic majority would be to keep it at the length that it is, because clubs want to keep paying 38, 40, 42 week contracts. That's the real reason the season is as congested as it is. I know the FAI could do it better. You could talk about the summer break, and some players want that, some don't. You can talk about the structure and the spacing of various things, the size of the league. But fundamentally, it comes down to the fact that the majority of clubs want to pay their players for as few weeks as possible. And that is one of these things where actually you don't need the majority vote and preference on this decision. You need a strong leadership from the top to say, if we are a professional league, this is what we're going to do, and you have to sort out your budget accordingly. That's what should happen. Whether it will happen, well, we'll see.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit more Cork City with JD in the third part of the show, because he was obviously at the club during its peak times over the last few years. But what have you made of the league so far? It's been Rovers and Dundalk kind of shooting up to the front. Is it going to stay like that, do you think?
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if there's any change in that. I think the two of them have looked very impressive so far. I know I heard you in the first part there talking that, Rovers obviously scored their six. Let's say going into Friday night, Rovers scored their six last week. But Dundalk will take a lot of heart from going to somewhere like Shelburne, a packed Talca Park, and, grinding out results as well. It's what they do. It's what they do so well. They've got players there that are just used to winning, and I think that means a lot. Really looking forward to seeing the game on Friday night. I think it'll be a good test for both teams now. It'll be interesting, and I hope it's a good advert for the league as well.
I suppose the worry for Sligo is that your lack of goals was going to be a question mark for a lot of teams pre-season, but it has been borne out so far for Sligo. Is it something that you're continually working on?
It's something we're working on every week and working in training, and like the quality that we have there, I think it is something that will turn. You look at the likes of Ronan Coughlin, the likes of Ronan Murray. There could be some movement maybe and more players coming in.
You've brought in a striker from New Zealand now, New Zealand international. He's putting it in your
Another
WhatsApp group yet.
He hasn't joined yet.
He'll be all right.
That's an example.
But it's an evolving stage of the season. Like, this is the problem that you face. You're probably still getting to know some of these characters and personalities.
Yeah, in some ways we are.
You have your own gaff, though. You live on your own. It's like you've just been given this kind of converted stable.
Except when you come bunking in there.
Well, every now and then.
Every now and then,
two-bed house all to himself.
Next to the ground as well, apparently.
Very close,
yeah. It's
converted
good
horse stables.
Yeah, no, I have to say, now, Sligo itself is...
great town.
I really like it there, and I have to say, love the town and love the... I'd say it's very underrated as a sort of a destination, you know, the coastline and places to see, places to eat. It's a really lovely part of the world.
Waterford United coming up is a
Waterford
big game.
Waterford FC
is a big game already. And, you know, Waterford obviously started well against St. Patrick's, but have faced a couple of difficult games since and wobbled at home to Bowes and Shamrock Rovers. Kind of disappointing that the Shamrock Rovers on a Monday night could have been a big crowd down there, but this is a big game.
Yeah, it's a big game, and I think we're excited for it as well. You know, as I say, last week against Bowes, in general play, I thought we were very good. I thought there were parts of the game where we were really good, our passing, our possession, on a surface that was difficult for both teams. I've no doubt that Bowes would say the same. So no, I think it's a good opportunity for us at the weekend. Probably we might have a couple more players maybe back from injury as well. And look, I can see the green shoots. I'm very positive still about the season. We're three games into a 36-game season. It's certainly no time to panic.
Obviously, you're from Ballybuffet. You played for Cork City. Cork City, Finn Harps, all of a sudden is the making of the second biggest game of the weekend.
Yeah, another big game as well. Harps obviously started very well, taking...
They was said to Ollie Horgan on Highland Radio, what a start, Ollie, you know, you've 4 points, could have had six, could have had none.
Yeah, he's a character, all right. I remember him talking a few years ago about... They were in the mid-table and they were after winning maybe, you know, 5 out of 7 games or something. Are you aiming for Europe, Ollie? And he said, the closest we'll be getting to Europe is a plane to Lourdes.
Yeah.
You know, this sort of
what
stuff. And that's a famous quote. So
big game for Cork City.
Big game for Cork City as well. It's been a tough start to the season for them. And I think it's part to emphasise for them as well. They've played the two best teams in the league at this stage, and that was always going to be a difficult start for them. So it's certainly not a time for them to get too concerned either, albeit they've conceded a few goals. And, you know, I think they have a lot of good players down there still.
Can you believe the turnover, though? I mean, Garrett Morrissey the other night was the only... Like, he started. I know McNulty's on the bench and Alan Bennett's still around the place, but yeah. Morrissey was the only starter who was involved in the Cork Dundalk games that you were involved in. And you were there 2 seasons ago. Could you have imagined this quickly, that all of those lads could be gone? Basically, that group that you were... That group that you were with.
I suppose I don't think anyone could have foreseen it, really. You know, for everyone to be gone. I think the time that I left, look, it was my time to go. I think anyway, I was fairly content with the decision, and I needed a change and all of the things that went with it. But a lot of boys kind of left around the same time, and then last year, I suppose, just things started to unravel a little bit. And I mean, listen, us as players, we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes.
You have no clue about finances.
We have no idea about finances, no idea about budgets. At the end of the day, it's not something that's part of our remit. But it's certainly come to the fore recently. And, you know, to have to sell the sell-on clauses for the two lads down there, I have no doubt it was a difficult decision for them. Mm. But if it was one that had to be made, then for the continual run in the club, let's say, they had to do it.
It's Derry, Bowes, obviously Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk, Shelburne, Pats. Briefly, before we get to it in further depth later on, Rovers, Dundalk, what an absolute belter.
Yeah, brilliant game. Two proper teams.
How do you call it?
As I say there... Winning's a habit. I think Rovers winning the cup last year now will certainly have an effect on them. They'll galvanise them this season. They know they can do it now. But I just... Dundalk have lads that have been there and done it year in and year out, and they still won the league by a good number of points last year. It'll be interesting to see how... If Rovers can continue scoring the goals that they've been scoring, and if Rory Gaffney comes in and continues scoring goals for them. So, yeah, looking forward to the game. I can see it being a cagey affair to start the season anyway. I don't see it being too high scoring or anything.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, like, I think you mentioned the players that Rovers rested, but I mean, the Dock also didn't include Massey on Monday, Boyle, Slogger come off the bench. So they'll be rotating as well. I just think that there's every chance they'll cancel each other out, hopefully in an entertaining sort of manner. But I'm leaning towards a draw. But I do think, yeah, like, it's still a very similar core to that on Dock side. They're not suddenly just going to change their personality overnight. And they like Talla. Actually, you know, Talla suits them. They have a great record there, so I don't think they'll have any fears going there at all.
Thanks very much, lads. And just before we go on Air Sport 1, we kick off our live coverage next week. Our cameras will be in Dalymount Park on Friday, March 6th for Bowes against Shells in a Dublin derby. And the following night, we will bring you JD's Sligo Rovers against Tabletoppers Shamrock Rovers from the Showgrounds. On Friday, March the 13th, we will be at the home of the champions to see Dundalk against St. Pat's, Stephen O'Donnell returning to Oriel Park. All games are live on Air Sport 1.
So it's part three for our podcast listeners and YouTube viewers. We mentioned JD went from Cork City to Sligo Rovers earlier on. Gary Buckley did the exact same thing. And Gary Buckley was actually at the centre of one of my favourite LOI-related kind of banter stories. But it's actually more than banter. It's quite funny. You were in Vegas with Bucks, as he's more affectionately known.
Yeah, we were in Vegas. There was about 10 of us in Vegas. And one of the days, the tallest building in Vegas, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a sort of a rotating restaurant at the top of it. So
what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except
most of it, except for the story, let's say. And so we all, there was a lift up, and six or seven of us jumped into the lift along with this English couple, and there was a girl working in the lift as well. So we all jumped in anyway. We were all just talking to each other, and the next thing, Bucks just turns around to your one that was working in it. He says, "Well, how's business? Up and down?" So we're all in stitches. The English couple are looking at us like we have two heads. And yeah, just really, no, that's, I mean, that's just not funny. Like, bit of respect.
It reminds me of that Simpsons episode where, you know, it's like they go to Itchy and Scratchy and whatever. It's New Year's Eve every day. And Marge is like, "It must be wonderful to bring in the New Year every day." And your man is like, "Please kill me." She's probably thinking like that one.
A car going up or down, though?
That's our first question here. This is the fans' questions. God, we have to like mingle with the fans for this part of the show. This one is from Dylan on Instagram. What do Cork have to do to turn it around? Now, we don't have 3 hours to even begin.
They also have the answers to the financial questions that they're going to face, which is the problem. And they have to decide what to do now.
I do slightly disagree with what you're saying there. Anyone could make this mistake. People can overstretch. And whatever it was, they thought that the crowd was going to be a lot bigger.
Johnny, they got 800 grand from getting into the Champions League. Mm. 850 grand. Like, that's proper, like a proper prize fund. In addition to qualifying for Europe consecutively for a couple of seasons.
How did they spend it?
And, well, I mean, they had an expanded squad as well. And I don't have the answers to all the, I don't have the access to the books, but I'm just saying that I think you have to be pretty harsh on the mistakes that were made, because, or else, then what? Like, what is the, like, where is the league going if a team that generated the second most income? I mean, realistically, if you were to look at sort of, if you were to draw a chart of money made from Europe and whatever it might be, they would have no doubt been the second most successful, but the biggest crowds in the league, and they're in butter. So it's either like bad mistakes have been made, or the thing just doesn't work. So like, there's no real happy answer to that. To this sort of debate.
Well, I thought your squad was too big, but that's, I'm not blaming the management, because the management's going to spend what they have. But your squad seemed very big, and obviously Cork overstretched. They must have spent too much on players they didn't necessarily need, or something went badly wrong anyway that it came to this.
Well, the squad that we had when I was there, I certainly wouldn't have said it was too big. And it's very difficult. I don't think you can blame, you know, you couldn't blame a manager, for example, for that, because like, he's going to spend the budget that he's given. Now, as I say, we have no idea about the ins and outs of the finance and that in the background. And we had no idea of the, let's say, predicament that the club was potentially going to be in. Mm-hmm. So it's a very tough situation for them at the moment. And I know there'll be a lot of people hurting down there, particularly, you know, given it is a fan-run club. Mm-hmm.
Second one in from C. Dinny, the real C. Dinny, Will Finn Harris.
As opposed to the fake C. Dinny, who obviously is the bane of his life on social media.
C. Dinny, he's a Finn Harris fan, you might know him.
It's a real
is
Dinny.
He a Finn Harris fan?
C. Dinny, yeah. It's a real Dinny Cork.
No, I think the picture of his crest might be a Cork crest.
It's a Finn Harris related question, so maybe he isn't actually. Will Finn Harris maintain the current depressed form over the course of the season? Ollie Horgan would obviously say no. And what should their targets for the season be? I would argue should be to stay up.
Well, that would have been their first target anyway, I have no doubt.
And I can't see them getting relegated, honestly.
And certainly if you'd have asked Ollie at the start of the year, that would have been that would have been his answer. But
beating your hand off for a playoff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But if you look at his recruitment and stuff and the players that he's brought in, I think I heard Dan say it earlier as well, it's seasoned League of Ireland players and very talented players as well. From what I heard, they were actually unlucky to draw up in Derry. Didn't see the game.
On that time, what did you make of the way they were set up? Because they seemed, I only saw, I think the first half, I was at the races. I only half watched it, but they seemed to really kind of suppress what Derry were trying to
do. They set up a three at the back, and then they had wing backs. One of the wing backs, like, it was Webster, Mark Russell, the other one. So like, they're actually quite, you know, very solid. And I think Derry were actually pretty frustrated, and Declan Devine was saying afterwards that they're playing against wing backs, and actually Derry didn't play with any width. They actually could have like got in behind and caused Harps some problems, and they didn't. And Derry were very safe and sort of, you know, they played into their hands a small bit and didn't really. And it was actually Stephen Mallon come on for Derry as a sub in the second half as a winger who I think is going to be, he's on loan from Sheffield United. And I think following the sort of Parkhouse success, I think Mallon, on the evidence of this, will do well. And Fergueira, great skill. But this is the point, like Harps already know what they are at the start of the season. They have a sort of an identity and a structure. And this is why you can't be too, and even I know Johnny's obviously hopeful, very hopeful that Sligo Rovers are going to turn it around. But would you have teams that are still trying to figure out and, you know, identify players? And I think I'd just be a bit more worried about Cork than I thought I would be, having seen them, that, like, this is a tough league to suddenly just learn as you go along. And I think Harps have a very good chance. I think Friday will be interesting because Harps will get in there with a firm game plan and know what they're going to do. And are Cork going to be good enough to play under the pressure of unlocking that? I mean,
what will the crowd be like, actually, Turner's Cross, for that game? Will they be like backing a young team, a young management team, cognizant of what's been going on, or will they be getting on their back? Like some Dundalk fans were absurdly on Monday, kind of moaning in the first half because they were only 1 or 2 nil up, whatever.
Well, I think it was just because the game was just a non-event as well. Yeah. But that's part of the problem. But
I mean, compare Dundalk fans sort of moaning a bit to Cork City fans who are definitely staring the possibility of relegation. How will they treat the young players, you think, on Friday?
I'm sure it'll be a mixture. I know, like, let's say my first 2 years down in Cork, we had a couple of tough times and crowds started to dwindle and, you know, they would have been getting on our back a little bit, and it's really just because they want you to do well. And then conversely, obviously, when we were doing well, you know, Turner's Cross was a fortress. It's hard for the young players in the situation that they're in as well to, you know, it is a lot of pressure on their back to come from that and to pick up results against teams like Harps. And, you know, Friday night's going to be a very difficult one for them.
Given your history of injuries, which has been very difficult, I want your opinion on this particularly euphemistically.
Yeah,
there,
absolutely.
Paul Hogan, should there be a further drive towards AstroTurf pitches in the
Please
league, similar
no.
to the
Please
lower
no.
league? Yeah. Okay, so my ask you to this is, I'm not a fan of Astro, but we have a lot of cancellations and we have climate change.
From a business point of view?
Yes.
If you're going to look at this purely from a business point of view, absolutely AstroTurf is the way to go. If you're going to look at it from a physical player welfare point of view, I don't know the stats on it, but I would certainly argue that, well, if you asked the players in the League of Ireland today, would they rather play on grass or AstroTurf, including the Dundalk players and, let's say, Derry players, probably they play on it at home every two weeks, they want to play on grass.
But this is the thing, they don't actually, how long-term studies have been done to figure out what the, you know, effects of this are longer term, because it can't have been that extensive.
Well, but I think they know how their body feels as well. Yeah. I mean,
the chalk lads coming down the stairs the next day and they're like absolutely crocked.
The flip side of that is, I mean, there are players who have been at the dog for 6-7 seasons, like
absolutely.
Massey and Shields and people like that, who are showing no ill effects as time goes on. But it is a difficult one, and it goes back to the classic small league syndrome. And, you know, like, if you're reliant on, say, a lot of council-run pitches, and so clubs don't even necessarily have control or the finances to look after their pitch maintenance, and, like, you have a situation where, like, games are being called off in the early weeks. We've spoken earlier about the fixture madness that exists at the moment. Now, again, you're talking about, like, it's a solution. Like, it's not two wrongs making a right in any respects here, but, like, if you have a narrow league season, then you don't need games called off on top of that. Now, my point is that the season should be longer anyway, so you should be able to absorb that. But it's between the wind and the pitches, like, it's a tough start of the season in terms of that and the elements and the impact it can have. But the trade-off for that is the summer football, the benefits that can have for Europe. And hopefully, like, again, if we were a massively wealthy league with loads of resources, then you mightn't even necessarily even need to be playing a summer season. You could have, you know, you wouldn't be in that situation, but we are where we are for a reason. So I can understand why the debate is there. I mean, the new Daily Mount is going to be AstroTurf. I mean, I don't know what the Derry one is like. I've never heard as much complaints about the Derry one as I have about the Dock one.
Well, it's quite new.
You got to hope that the actual technology is evolving. Mm. I mean, the first Dundalk one was a farce, you know, and you've seen bad AstroTurf pitches. There are good ones out there.
Yeah, oh no, undoubtedly there are good ones. And the Derry one is probably an example of a good one, let's say. Even the stadium itself, you know, it's a really lovely place
but
to play football.
They regress, like, that's the point. They do regress quite badly after time, like, so.
They probably can do, but I assume that the newer ones are probably, you know, better able to handle it.
I suppose I should mention the names, Patrick Hooban, Aaron Connolly, Rory Gaffney, the latest Galwegian, very good striker, not to play for Galway United at any stage of his career. And it looks maybe more or less likely now, but he signed for Shamrock Rovers. Dan Mohan, Do you think the signing of Gaffney for Rovers, the final piece of the puzzle, will it finally see them dethrone Dundalk? It looks a good signing, Dan, the face of it. I haven't seen him play in years now, but he's 30 now.
It is a good signing. The one thing I would say is that he's had a difficult 18 months or so. He had a very interesting career arc in England, that he climbed his way up to League One level at Bristol Rovers, played a big part in them getting promoted from League Two, having gone to England actually quite late compared to others. Last, he went to Salford. Now, it's very hard. I mean, a lot of players went to Salford, you know, maybe just to see Manchester, or maybe it was just because there was bloody good deals on offer. I mean, I think we can sort of figure it out.
Not good deals in
but they've climbed their way up. And the last year, you know, Walsall, he was on loan, didn't seem to be popular there, struggled with his form a bit. So, yeah, on his ability, it looks like a great signing, but he's clearly got to get it back to himself a small bit from where he's been. Now, again, like, it can be very difficult in the lower leagues in England for someone to get stuck in a rut and it's hard to snap out of it. And then they come home to familiar territory and they take flight. Look, I mean, you would have looked at Pat Hoobin's figures before he came home and said, well, how is he going to transform it? Where is he at compared to where he was? And actually, you know, from day one, he kicked off. And Stephen Bradley has played with him, seems to think that he will very much suit the style of their team and what they need. So I don't know what you think, JD, but it's a significant addition. I don't know if you can say with certainty, well, this is the final piece of the jigsaw. I think there's a hell of a long road to go before you can sort of make a statement like that, I think, anyway.
Yeah, no, you can't say anything with certainty, but it's definitely is an interesting signing. And I know from playing against him before, he's a right good player. Like, he is a very good player. Gerald Morrissey lived with him when he was over in, was it Cambridge they were at together, I think? And he was very impressed with how talented he was too. I used to keep in touch with Gerald when he was over there too. So if he comes home and if he does take off, it'll be a massive addition. And like, it could be that last little push that they need to get over.
I'm getting a slight vibe off you, though, that you sort of fancy Dundalk this year, do you? Or the old dog for the hard road?
Yes, something like that, maybe. Look, it was probably something that I thought last year. It was a similar question last year where Rovers were progressing and looked like the chief threat to Dundalk. And I just thought last year that in the big games, in the league or whatever, that Dundalk would have a little bit too much for them. I kind of think that again this year, but I think this signing's massive, and I think the first three games have been a bit of a statement from Rovers as well as to how far they've come. And as I was saying earlier as well, the cup final could be a real galvanising thing for them, just to give them that confidence that they can get over the line, you know.
It is a kind of a game of a statement of intent potentially for Rovers, and Dan, there could be a hell of a crowd in Tallaght when you think about it. So much at stake, albeit early in the season, and being a bit of shadow boxing as well in terms
and
of...
And there will be, like, we spoke about that earlier. Like, Well, you have a history of actually doing it, but I don't think anyone's going to come away and make definitive statements about the title.
Well, Dundalk
after
are missing a lot of players at the moment, which
is
interesting.
They're missing five. I mean, they're missing Mountney, Georgie Kelly,
Murray,
and I think there's a fifth one as well. But the, you know, it's all
Kolovic as well.
Yeah, Kolovic has to come in. Sorry, it's all around the midfield area now. I think McElhenney and Georgie Kelly are very close. Mountney and Murray maybe not as close. And Kolovic is a bit of an unknown. Like, he's a sort of a right-sided. It seems to be a player who played on the right of a sort of a front three. And we don't know. He has to get his clearance. And it looks like he's very close. I mean, the dog tried to sign Troy Parrott in the unknown, which says something about their, you know, at least the confidence that they have. If not, it was possibly unrealistic to think they could get
Finney
it done.
Parrott went off on one in the programme notes as well, I saw.
He was having a bit of a pop.
He had a pop at several people.
He had a pop at a pundit who said that they were ageing as a team. Now, I don't know. I think Shane Supple would be the short odds on favourite. And I actually thought you were a contender as well. It was something you could say, but I think it might have been Supple. But
well,
the
this
other
is
one,
also the fellow that says Liverpool aren't that good a team.
Well, this is actually very Liverpool true. And Eric Cantona was overrated.
Absolutely.
But he hated Eric Cantona as a child in the two. The opinion and the statement are unrelated. And then the other one was he had a go at an agent with a national newspaper column who was unhappy with him over something. Now, I don't know if it's related to that.
Did you see as well, Pat Dolan gave us big praise in the paper last week.
Pat Dolan was, I think, was critical of Vinny in his pre-season piece.
What did he say?
I think he spoke about the number of interviews he's done, and you know, Vinny seems to be enjoying the award circuit and something along those lines. It was a dig of some description, so I think it's fairly clear that they were in the firing line. We're running
out of time. Rovers Dundalk.
You're looking for predictions all the time.
Give us some sort of idea of what's going to happen. You reckon it'll be cagey?
Well, I think there's a chance it will be. But at the same time, I hope it's more cagey, but there's actually good midfield play in the game. I don't think they're suddenly just going to start lumping it. You know, I don't think it's going to be like that. But I think, you know, you might see, and you go back to the criticism of that some of the Dundalk players met at Rovers after the cup final, that they play some nice football.
They're pretty.
And it doesn't really go anywhere. And like that's a bit harsh, but at the same time, you can see how that could happen in a game like this, where I think actually this Dundalk team, they're actually happy enough to sort of at times maybe absorb a small bit of pressure and then all of a sudden play Duffy or use someone who can actually, you know, hit them on the counter. Because Rovers will have a lot of the ball. There's no doubt that they will. And the game in Tallaght last year in June, which was probably as well as they've played against Dundalk.
And lost.
And they lost. And there was something in that game which sort of summed up their battle. And it's, you know, they got the penalties in the cup final, right? And that changes the whole story of the day. But at the same time, they were 1-0 up until Duffy banged in the goal in injury time and they couldn't shake them off. So there's two ways of looking at that in terms of converting those penalty kicks completely change the dynamic between the teams. And Chris Shields didn't play in that game either. So there is other factors there that make you think that actually, in a weird way, this Dundalk team might be slightly underestimated, which seems an absurd thing to say, but I think people are expecting the changing of the guard before it might actually happen.
Cheltenham Nap, before you go?
That's in the Coral Cup.
Interesting. Do you have one, Dan?
Not really at the moment.
Need to look at the handicaps.
See what happens. Maybe a Styrian for Lange to start it off.
Very interesting.
You give us one there that we can avoid, will
solo
you?
Solo in the triumph.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks a million for coming in. Great to see you again.
Thanks, lads. Good to have you. Mm.
I can't wait to go to Tallaght the weekend. It's going to be an absolute blinder between Galway United and Shamrock Rovers second, or whatever they're called, on Saturday. But the game on Friday night, we're all looking forward to that. Thanks very much for listening on the podcast and for watching on YouTube. See you next week for episode 4.